Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Podcast Manager Show. If this is your first episode, welcome. If it is not, thank you so much for coming back. This is a really special episode because I'm going to be talking to my virtual assistant turned customer success guru, Sarah Whitaker, who is also a podcast manager. So we are going to be talking about guest management today, and she's going to be giving us some really great tips on how to provide guest management to your clients. And her and I just have a really awesome conversation about how we manage this service in my business and in her business. And if you're not sure what guest management is, it is booking guests for your clients' podcasts. It is researching those guests. It's communicating with those guests. There can be a lot of different pieces, and that's what we're going to dive into today. There is so much value in providing this service to your clients. And I think it's one of the tickets to really increasing your packages and the value that you're bringing to the table when landing clients. So let's go chat with Sarah about guest management. Hey there, I'm Lauren, and you're listening to the Podcast Manager Show, a podcast for podcast managers. Each week, we cover the technical and tactical aspects of running a profitable podcast manager business. With over 90,000 new shows starting each month, podcast managers are in demand. And I'm here to help you land your dream clients while reaching your monthly income goals and without working like crazy. Are you ready? Let's get to today's episode. Hey, Sarah, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
We are going to be talking about guest management, specifically who to book and where to look, which is so catchy. But I'm excited to dive into this because it's a service that you and I both really love doing for our clients. But a lot of people have questions over it. And there's an easy way of doing it with lots of systems in place. And then there's kind of a hard way. So I'm excited to kind of chat through that about some of the ways that I do it, some of the ways that you do it, so that all of the listeners can piece together a system that will work really well for, you know, their individual clients.
Sounds great. Awesome. Yeah, there's so many different ways that you can go about it. So it'll be fun to compare our experiences.
Yeah. So first off, you are a podcast manager. Let me know how you got started and kind of where you are today.
Yeah. So I have had my business for about a year and a half now, but I have not always done podcast management. So I used to be a teacher. I taught for 7 years. And when I had my daughter, I was like, I got to get out of here. I need to do something different. I always dreamed about working from home, but had no idea how. Like, I had no idea about this virtual space, any of that. I ended up seeing a Facebook ad for Michaela Quinn's course, who you know, and ended up taking her course to learn how to start a business. And so I started as a virtual assistant, and I was doing, you know, all the things, anything that my clients wanted, I was learning how to do, doing it for them. And it was great. And I'm so thankful for all the experiences I had. But it, when you're doing everything, it's like super overwhelming. And I had actually heard you on Michaela's podcast talking about podcast management. And I was like, this sounds so cool, but I could never do this. Like, it sounded too techy. And I thought, like, there's no way. And, you know, a few weeks went by and I looked at your course and I ended up reaching out to you and asking you a few questions about the course. And I think maybe like a week or two later, it was shortly after you posted a job that you needed a VA. And so I applied and I got the position. And so we started working together. And that's where I got to take your course and I got to learn a little bit more about podcast management, learn everything about podcast management, really. And shortly after that, I got my first podcasting client. And so it's kind of funny. Three of my clients that I had when I was doing virtual assistant work ended up starting a podcast all within like months of each other. So it just like perfectly lined up. So I ended up doing their launches for them. And so now I'm, I'm in this transition space where I am marketing myself as a podcast manager, and that's like what I've really niched down to. But I'm still working with a couple clients doing more of like the VA task work, just because I love working with them and I like doing a mix of both. So that's kind of the short version of how I got to where I am.
Yeah. And I agree that transition, just as an individual going from virtual assisting to podcast management, is really a nice transition because you learn so much, like you said, doing all these random tasks that you're a little bit more confident with niching down. But also with these clients that you've landed as a virtual assistant, they've worked with you for maybe a couple months. They trust you. So when you tell them like, oh, by the way, I'm marketing myself as, you know, I'm a podcast manager also now, then they're like, oh, that's perfect. Because I mean, everyone's kind of thinking about starting a podcast, at least in our world.
Yeah, totally.
So it's like, oh, this is a sign. I clearly need to start a podcast if my virtual assistant just became a podcast manager.
Oh, definitely. There was a little bit of like, they just mentioned it. And I'm like, I'll talk you into this because I really want you to start a podcast. And you're so right. Everybody's interested in starting one because it's just such a great way to grow your business.
Yes, yes, yes. If there's like the biggest fans of podcasts and podcast managers, it's you and I. So we won't talk about that. We'll talk about that as little as possible. But when a client asks you to take over their guest management, help them book guests, what's kind of your first step with them?
So my first step is to have a specific call with them just to get like really detailed information about who they want on their show. It's definitely an easier process if you have already been working with that client, because especially if you've been editing for them already, because you know their stuff, like you know who they've had on, who they haven't had on, what they like to talk about, what they like to stay away from. So you definitely have like a level up there. But regardless, I always have a sit down with them and kind of just pick their brain about, first of all, if they have specific names in mind of who they would want on. And if not specific names, specific topics that they want to cover. And that kind of helps me like generate a list of people. And it also opens the conversation to getting specific about the type of package that they want. So there's a huge difference between reaching out to 3 people every month or reaching out to 20 people a month. I have a client who does 2. She has in her calendar, she blocks off 2 spots every week for guest interviews. So she loves to be in advance and like just do tons of interviews every week. So I reach out to more people for her than I might for somebody who's only doing 1 guest interview a month. So getting specific about who they want on their show, how many people they want me to reach out to, and if I'm going to be doing the research for them or not. So maybe they have a list of names of people and they just want to let me know who it is and I reach out to them, or they might just hand it all off to you and say, you know, go ahead and do the research. And that's obviously a lot more work than if they give you names of people.
Yeah, definitely. So you're almost having a discovery call for specific guest management.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I like to set expectations, like just like I know you had Angie on to talk about pitching. And it's similar in the sense that I want them to understand that I don't ever like guarantee that if I reach out to 5 people, those 5 people are going to say yes. So having that conversation too of like, I'll reach out to a mix of people who might have a larger audience and then also people who have a smaller audience. And having that nice mix gives you a higher chance of getting people on your show.
Yeah.
It is a bigger yes rate than it is pitching, because everybody wants to be a guest on a podcast.
So true. So true. I think that's important to note that like if someone listening has had experience with podcast pitching, meaning getting your client to be on shows, that's a lot harder of a sell than it is asking people to come on your show. Unless you're like talking about Amy Porterfield or something.
Right.
And I wanted to ask you about this. Have you had clients, and maybe even if you haven't, what do you do if a client says like, okay, I want you to come on and pitch to like these big, big names, but then they also have to fill up their interview spots. How do you set expectations around that?
So I'll usually reach out to maybe, so if you're, I don't know, reaching out to like 5 to 10 people, you might make a third of that, like a larger audience. So let's use the number 5 because that's easy. You might have 2 of those people be bigger guests. And I might go about that a little differently than I would somebody who has a smaller following. So if I'm pitching Brené Brown or Amy Porterfield, I am going to send more follow-ups. I might try and reach them in different areas, like on social media and on email. So getting that across to your client and just making sure that they know that people are really, really busy, especially people with those big of a following. And I will reach out to them, but it might not happen.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you can tell your client, like in the package, you can say like, hey, I'll reach out. I'll follow up until I get a no. I think that's really powerful for clients. Because I mean, a lot of clients are like, yeah, I really want to have a Brené Brown on my show, but I understand that that might be unlikely. But if you tell them, hey, I'll reach out and I'll keep following up, you know, every week and then every 2 weeks and then every month or whatever your system is until I get a no, then they're like, oh, okay, this is really us putting our best foot forward. Then like, yeah, I'll fill out the information on their like form on their website. And then, of course, if I don't follow up, I'm definitely never going to hear from them again, right?
Yes. Oh, totally. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's funny, like, you never know. Even some of the bigger names, definitely just give it a shot. You never know who will say yes, honestly. I've had a couple bigger people in my client's space that said yes, and it was just such a cool experience. And we never thought that they would, but they did. Mm-hmm. So it's always fun to be able to provide that for your client.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like getting bigger names on your client's show is actually easier than I expect. Do you think that?
Yeah, I do. I just, like I said, it's so funny that the way that things work out. And yes, we've had a handful of people who we've been like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that this is happening. And you have to find ways to be creative. Like right now, I'm working with someone that we're trying to get on her podcast. And so I suggested maybe we've already reached out a few times and haven't heard anything. And I suggested maybe you like make a quick video that we can email her, like something to make our pitch stand out against other people.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example of a creative thing that you've done that's worked on a bigger name or a bigger audience? Or has it always been kind of like standard, but they just said yes?
Just making your pitch personalized to them and kind of showing them how their work has impacted your client's life or business. So making that personal connection, and especially like if a bigger name has a book, like so many people are authors now. So if they have a book coming out, like making it known to them that you want them to come on to have the opportunity to promote their book or their service or their product or whatever it may be. So showing them just like how valuable it would be for both parties to come on.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. And focusing, I think every pitch, if we want to talk about pitches, every pitch should be about how the person you're pitching, how they are going to impact your audience. So instead of like pitching, hey, I'm so great because I've done this and I've done that and I've done this and therefore you should come on my show because I'm awesome. Instead, it's, hey, this is who my audience is and they really need to hear your message. They really need to learn more about money management. They really need to hear about X, Y, and Z that you're teaching. And it would be so impactful if you came on. Then the person's like, oh, shoot, I need, you know, this is a great use of my time. Because if we're talking about people that they have so many other things that they can do, they have lots of opportunities coming at them. And a lot of us do. Like, even if we don't, you know, don't have hundreds of thousands of people following us, we all have a lot going on, that making it so that it's like, hey, this is going to be really impactful for you and for our audience. So it's a win-win.
Absolutely. People love to feel like they're making a difference and that they'll make an impact on whoever they're coming on to speak to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two of the things that I feel like are really effective for me and pitching one of my clients. Well, number one, having some sort of like impressive stat, and not even like, it doesn't even have to be like, oh, they've been in the top 10 on Apple Podcasts. It doesn't need to be something that's like actually super impressive. It's just anything I think that you can lead with. So like digging around in that person's information of like, what's some sort of stat I can pull? Do they have, you know, 1,000 people in their Facebook group? Do they like, what does their email list look like? Like any sort of number, yes, that you can use to kind of get people's attention. I think that's really important. But two things that I've done that I think is good for reaching people that are bigger than your client is looking through their freebies and seeing if you can pull one of their, like a topic you already know they talk about. I got Denise Duffield Thomas, who's like a money mind. I got her on the show, on a show, because I used her masterclass or something like that. I used that topic, changed it a tiny bit, and asked her if she could do it on a show. And I'm thinking she said yes, because number one, the audience was in line with who she speaks to. But also, she like already had that teed up. She already knew what she would say. Like, it was clearly a great topic for her because she was doing a masterclass on it.
Absolutely. I love that. And I always do that. So I have my email templates, and we can talk about this, but I have my templated emails that I'll use to, you know, to be more efficient. But one of the ways I personalize it is like, I will do digging on their website or social media or whatever it is. And exactly like you just said, give them the topic so that it's an easy yes for them. They don't feel like they have to prepare anything. It's something that it's a specific topic that they know that they can talk about and they can do it well. And I totally agree. I think that that makes a big difference.
Yeah. And even if it is like someone that has a bigger following than your client does, even if it's someone that is going to be an easy yes, just saying, hey, we would love for you to come on the show to talk about X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes if your client has like an actual like friendship with the person, you don't need to necessarily say like, I know for me, sometimes I'm like, I don't even know what they're going to talk about, but they're friends. So they want to come on just to chat, like almost like you and I right now, we could talk about anything.
Yeah.
But it really is so much better, number one, for the show, but for both people to understand, okay, what topic are we going to try to talk about?
Yeah.
So doing that for anyone is important. One of the other things that I've done that I think I've gotten some people's attention, because sometimes it's just like, you need somebody to read that first email.
Absolutely.
Sometimes they don't even read that first email, right?
Yeah.
So when you're sending these emails, I even run into that with a client of mine. She'll say like, hey, will you just email this person? So I email them and they never look at the email. And I'm like, oh, well, you have a connection with them and I'm still not getting eyeballs. Yes. So one thing I've done is either with a freebie or if I've bought a product from them is responding to one of their emails. So, okay, I bought a sleep course. Like even for my third child, I still didn't know how to sleep train. So I had to buy a sleep course and through taking care of babies. And she's has like literally a million followers on Instagram. So if I wanted to get her on a show, I could just respond to one of her emails. And I feel like then her team is going to open it up because it's kind of like tricky, but it's still a genuine offer. So I feel like it's still like moral in my mind. But yeah, then they just will open it up because they're like, oh, this is one of our subject lines. What does this customer have to say?
It's brilliant. I love that idea. And I will be using that in the future. You have to think of something, like whether it's a catchy subject line or your amazing idea, something to make you stand out when you're reaching out to these people who are getting hundreds of emails a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing that just popped in my head was I of just like kind of the management. And I want to talk about setting up a calendar flow. We'll get into that. But one thing that people ask me from time to time is, should I use my personal or business email, or should I be inside of my client's email? And I think that's preference of your client. I think it's best if it's your client's email. And I actually had my client made me an email address under her name. So it was like Lauren at her name. And no one was opening my emails because the sender was Lauren Wrighton. And they're like, who's Lauren Wrighton? They knew her. So I stopped using it. So I think, so even if that was my business, personal business email account, it would probably be the same thing, that you really want it coming from your client's name.
Yeah, no, I agree. I have a client that does, it's her name and then the word podcast. And then that's the email address. And we've had pretty good success with that. But yeah, I would agree with that. I always use the client's email when I reach out to guests and have like a signature that goes with it.
Like your name signature?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
With their like podcast name underneath it. Just so that if it's coming from me and it's like from my perspective, they're not getting confused as to like, who is this email coming from? Is it coming from the podcast host or her assistant?
Yeah, that makes sense. So then let's talk about the first step is like getting an idea of what your client is looking for. How many people do they want on the show? What types of people? setting expectations around that you're going to reach out to some bigger fish, some people that are easy yeses? And then also, are you responding or looking at pitches that they get for people to be on their show? Do you usually do that?
So I actually do not do that. I only do the side of reaching out to new people. Mm-hmm. It just has turned out that way because I don't know. I think most of the pitches that they do get, for some reason, they're just honestly like don't even hardly look at them, which is so bad. But No, I only reach out to people. There are occasions, you know, it's funny actually. Sometimes lately, I have gotten a few to the same email that I use to reach out to guests, but it's been from people who are in the exact same space as the client, which is basically like competition. So it just hasn't worked out.
Interesting.
Yeah. But no, I mostly just handle the reach out. So once we determine how many people I'll reach out to every month, I will create a spreadsheet and I'll have their names. Let's say I'm doing the research. So as I'm doing research, I'll have their names, their website, the email address, which can sometimes be tricky to find, and then like a topic idea. And I use Streak. Do you use Streak at all on Gmail?
Yeah, that's the like to see if they open your email.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you can create email templates on there too that you can just reuse and personalize each time. So it saves a lot of time. And before I do that, usually when I step into guest management, my clients don't have any kind of scheduling set up, or it might be kind of set up, but it's not very streamlined. So I use Calendly. I know that you use Acuity. They're very similar, but I will set that up first. So when somebody goes to book, they'll put their information, you know, their name, their email, their bio, any kind of links that might be in the show notes, their headshot, and then some questions that they might want to be asked on the podcast. And then I'll set up a flow so that once they are booked, they get the reminder emails and all of that. Mm-hmm. So as I reach out, I'll just kind of track it on my spreadsheet. I'll track follow-ups. So usually on Mondays, I'll go in and look at who I haven't heard from. And that's kind of when I'll do my follow-ups and track it that way. And then I'll color code it based on who has said yes, who has said no. And that's a shared spreadsheet with my clients so they can see the status of everything.
Do a lot of your clients check on that spreadsheet?
Not really. No, yeah. They don't, unless there's somebody that they really want on. Mm. And we'll kind of like talk back and forth about that. But really, I feel like this is a good thing, but it's also like, I'm careful about who I reach out to, because when they are entrusting you to make these decisions and reach out to these people, like I pretty much have free rein where, you know, they're trusting me that I know their podcast well enough that I can find guests that are right for it. So, you know, once things are going, it's a pretty hands-off process for them. Mm-hmm. I'll kind of just let them know about updates, but realistically, they're not looking at the spreadsheet.
Yeah, that's good to know. I kind of attract the person that's hands-free as well. Uh-huh. And I believe that most people, like you said, once they are willing to outsource guest management, you've already built a little bit of trust with them, either by working with them or they're just trust you from the start. But yeah, you have to, it is more of, I don't want to say a serious role, but there is a lot more of like, okay, if you book someone that doesn't end up being that great, it comes back to you. And the only reason I say that is because I've made mistakes. Like, I'm always the first one to be like, dude, I've done it wrong. And it's easier when you have niched down. So if you're always working with, this always takes a little bit of time, but like you've kind of niched down to where you're only working with podcasters that are in like the mindfulness space, then you know the like players, you know the players that you can do a really great job.
Absolutely.
I had a client that was like, I don't want to have any guests that are like in the online space. Like I want like brick and mortars. I want, you know, e-commerce. And I'm like, the online space, like coaches and all of like those type of people, that's who I know. That's who I network with. So I was like, oh, shoot, this is going to be a true challenge for me. And I booked two people that she didn't like. And I was like, yikes. Like, that's uncomfortable. I didn't think the interviews ended. Like, they were good interviews. But I was like, okay, I had to take responsibility. And this was not that long ago, might I add. So obviously we all make mistakes and hopefully your client will understand, of course. And in the beginning, when you're building up that trust, they might have you like approve, like, hey, I want to reach out to this person. What do you think? And it's a little bit more collaborative as you kind of build up that trust with them.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I have also been in that position where you get that text, that interview did not go well. And I'm like, oh gosh, that is not a good feeling. I'm so sorry. Because in the end, like you can do your research and but if it's somebody that you've never heard on an interview before, or you don't know that much about, you don't know how their personalities are going to mesh. Mm-hmm. And most of the time it's great. But yes, I've been in that situation. It is not a good feeling.
Yeah. And like you said, if you can like listen to them in any way, like go to their website, do they have like a YouTube video? Can you listen to them speak? How like confident are they? You know, can you gather any information from that? Have they been on any shows? I've found like the two times that I'm like, oh man, I wish I wouldn't have booked this person. Both of those were cold pitches to my client. So back to what you were saying, where it's like a lot of pitches that people get, they're not good. And so then your client might just completely stop looking at them. And I look at them for my current clients and I weed through them. But it's like maybe literally one in 20 that like I even will respond to. So you're also fighting that when you're pitching people, you're also kind of fighting the bad pitches. So you do have to kind of come with a solid foot forward.
Absolutely. Back to your point about if you can finding like a, whether it's on their website or somewhere else, but somewhere where they've talked before so you can hear them. That's one of the ways that I will find guests too, is I'll kind of listen. And this is why it's so great to work with your ideal clients and people that you enjoy what they're doing. Because if you have a client that has a teacher podcast and that's your jam, then you will enjoy listening to other podcasts in that space and you can discover great guests that way too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think finding good guests, especially if the person has a really like niched topic, is going down rabbit holes. Like once you've listened to a couple of like your clients' podcasts, then who did they have on? If they have a show, go look at their show or just go look at their Instagram. Who are they? Who else are they talking to? Do those guests make sense? I even like going on Apple Podcasts. Obviously, they change what it looks like every month, I feel like. But if you go find the show in Apple Podcasts and you scroll down, it'll recommend different shows. So I'll look at that. I'll look at like who they have on, just going down rabbit holes of finding potential guests. But you mentioned earlier that you also look for like specific topics. So if your client wants like a specific topic, can you kind of explain how you go about that?
Yeah. So I do that in a few different ways. So again, kind of searching through podcasts using Apple. I take my daughter to and from school. So I'll kind of like do a quick search before I get in the car and I'll listen to, you know, a couple podcasts while I'm driving and just searching for keywords either on Apple or just using Google. But also Instagram is a great place to search for topic specific people. So I usually use hashtags and I just search that way until I find the right person. And that's a great way. It's funny because Instagram, I feel like I used to think of it as like, you don't reach out to people on Instagram. Like that's not professional. But now I think you should. And it's such a great space to find people. And using hashtags can lead you to so many different guests. And then again, you go down that rabbit hole where you find one person's page, you can see suggestions for similar people, and you get a really good feel for their personality. So Instagram, other podcasts, and also Facebook groups. So going in Facebook groups, and I made the mistake one time of posting. Saying it was in like a guest connection group. And I posted, you know, I have this client who's looking for guests about this topic. And I was like, this is going to be great. I'm just going to post this and we're going to find the best guest. You get bombarded and it didn't turn out to be any high quality interviews. So yeah. I don't do that anymore. But I do like to go into Facebook groups and kind of search for keywords related to that topic. And that's a really great way to find people. Or you can ask like a market research question, you know, are there any experts on blah, blah, blah. And without saying, I'm looking for a guest.
I totally agree. You can just say like, hey, does anyone talk about blah, blah, blah. Like I was looking for someone that was like a coach for real estate agents. And it was like, where am I going to find this at? And so I posted in a group, hey, is there anyone that like actually teaches real estate agents how to build their businesses? But I purposely didn't write like this would be, I'm looking for a guest for a podcast. Because yeah, then people like comment unrelated, like, oh, I love being on podcasts, but it's like not the right topic. And it's definitely podcast guesting is so hot right now that it's not hard to book people. It's hard sometimes to book the right people. So I think that research piece, and when you're building your packages, you have to account for there's going to be some time to research great guests.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like you said, if you're working with people, like I've had my clients be on each other's podcasts and they end up like forming these great relationships. And that's a really cool thing to see too. Another place for looking for, you know, specific topics and specific people are publishing websites for authors. So, I mean, there's a million different publishers out there, but you can search by topic. You can even, you know, search by genre. And we've found some really great guests that way. And again, you might have to do a little bit of digging to find the email address, or you might like find their publicist's name. Mm-hmm. But I've had a lot of success looking through websites like that.
That's a great tip. And I think authors are so great to have on too, because they're really ready to speak on the topic. I mean, they've written a book about it. So they have like, they could talk about one chapter. They could talk about their theory of whatever they're talking about in their book. Like they're really solid guests and they're well-spoken. Even though they're an author, they might not be well-spoken, but I found that they really are. They're very good at presenting whatever it is that they're kind of an expert at.
Yeah. That's what I've seen as well. They're always great guests. Mm-hmm. They are very well spoken and good at staying on topic, and they want to come on and be able to promote their book. And a lot of times they'll give like a discount code for the audience. So it works out really well.
Yeah. Do you have any tips on how to find email addresses, or how do you do it?
So I honestly just like keep digging. So a lot of times if you find the website, there'll be the contact page and, you know, there'll be that contact form. Well, usually if they have a contact form, you're not going to hear back from them. That's what I've found. Unless, I mean, a few times, yes. But a lot of times I think that it's hard to get through that way. So a lot of times I have found email addresses in like a frequently asked questions section on the websites. I've also found like a lot of times if they're working with like any kind of agency or they're an author that's working for a publishing company, they usually have certain people that represent them and you can find their email address. Mm-hmm. So you can do it that way. I have a few times reached out to people, like I might've found an email address and I didn't hear back, or I couldn't find any kind of email address no matter how hard I dig. I would then find them on Instagram and I would send them a message on Instagram and I would hear back from them, which is like so crazy to me that they would answer me on Instagram versus email.
Yeah, you're right. Like, do you generally speaking try to start it with an email, like start the relationship? Okay.
I do.
Yeah. And I used to think too, like, oh, it's tacky to pitch someone on Instagram. But I think too that the tides have kind of changed over the last year or so. It's like people want to do business in their DMs now. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because people are like, okay, if I own a business or my Instagram is a business Instagram. Like we're not just like chatting in the DMs. Like things are going down. So I agree with you that I used to be really adverse to like pitching people in the DMs. And what I still try to do, like you said, I try to start it with an email. And then if I can't find any email or I really want them on and they're not responding to emails, DMing them, hey, I have a client who's X, Y, and Z, like quick little snippet about the client. We'd love to have you on the show. If you're interested, send me your email. Mm-hmm. So that you can hopefully just get some sort of response of them like saying no or yes. And then you can either pull it into email or you can just book them through Instagram.
Yeah, I try to do the same thing. I try to pull them over to email. I will say, though, it does kind of depend on the space. So, for example, if it's a parenting podcast and you find a mom who might be like an influencer who speaks on a topic that you'd want as a guest, Instagram probably would be the right spot to start with. So it does depend. The more I keep saying authors, but somebody like an author or somebody kind of in that professional area, email is usually best first. So it kind of depends on the space that you're working with and like what their expertise is.
Yeah, that makes sense. Sometimes what I'll do is sign up for their freebie or their masterclass or whatever, and then I'll use that email. So sometimes I'll actually respond to it. And then sometimes I'll just, whatever email they emailed me, the link, it's usually like hello at or info at or whatever. So I'll use that. But sometimes that doesn't always work because it's like it's the email where everything's going to. And so things get like filtered out. Sometimes I'll then kind of fall back on social media.
Yeah. And you know, that just made me think, if the person you're reaching out to is a podcast host, I think it's called listennotes.com. It's just like another directory or platform for podcasts, but that always has an email address for every podcast. So that's a good place to look if they have a podcast.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people do.
Yeah, that makes sense because with like, if you actually look at a podcaster's RSS feed, then there's an email in there. So if the person has a show and you can like look through like the tech RSS feed, you can find whatever email it is that they've put as their public email for their podcast. And I've done that sometimes being like super sneaky when I'm trying to get my clients on shows because it's so much harder.
Yeah.
But it's like sometimes it'll be like a Gmail account, like a non-businessy. And I'm like, man, I'm just going to use this because why not? But yeah, sometimes it's not like their go-to email. You can like, I assume, but then you definitely get their attention because it's probably less emails going to that.
Mm-hmm. So I also, there are some databases that you can join. Like, and I really haven't utilized this enough, so I can't speak on it too much, but the one that I joined is called the Podcast Collaborative, and it's like a very low month. I think it's like $5 a month, maybe. And it is a really good way to search. Again, it is for podcast hosts, but it's for also for people who are looking for guests and people who want to be guests. So it's good for like doing a podcast swap if you want to invite somebody on your client show and then maybe they can be on their show. And it has all kinds of information. It's really easily searchable. So that's another great tool to use.
I like that. I remember when you and I were talking about this. This was a while ago and I didn't look into it. Have you booked people from there yet?
I haven't because I keep forgetting about it because I'm so used to doing it all these other ways. And I'm like, this would probably be so much easier, but I haven't utilized it yet.
Because I bet like with a database like that, in the beginning, it might be a little like, who knows who's on there? But then as they build up, then you can probably find some great guests. But yeah, I haven't used it either. Some of my clients, like once they're like online business coaches, essentially, and they are always in like coaching groups or masterminds. And so then they meet all these people. They're doing so much networking for their business that they're like, oh, it's either like someone that they want on their show because they're like this big person, or it's like all these people that they're networking with. So I think depending on who your client is and if they're doing that networking, they might be looking for their own guests like unintentionally. And then they might then ask you, like we've said, like for specific topics, like, hey, I want someone to talk about this. And then that's the research that you're doing. So it's so interesting because there's so many different ways that this might kind of end up being for you once you land a client for guest management. But I think one of the biggest takeaways is like when you're pricing this out, knowing that there could be some real research involved. So it's not just like, it's not usually just like an admin role.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It always, just like so many other things, it always takes longer than you think it's going to. But I will say the longer that you've been working with somebody and the longer that you've been in that space that you are researching in, the easier it gets and the faster it gets because you just become more familiar with the names and like where the best place to look is for that specific client.
Yeah, I agree. So we've talked a lot about how we are finding guests, where to look, and then how to book them. But once they've booked and they've, like you said earlier, they've given you their bio, their headshot, all of that, and then they record the interview. What are some of the things that you do post-recording?
So after the interview is done and we know when it's going to be live, I always email the guest with a link to where they can find the episode. And I like to use, sometimes I'll use like the smart link on Chartable or I think it's pod.link where it gives the audience an option to listen on any platform or their website link. So it's not just like giving them the Apple link to listen.
Mm-hmm.
So the link to where they can find the episode so that they can share it, and also a graphic, usually an audiogram that they can share, either sized for like Instagram, Facebook stories or for their feed. And just again, asking them to share with their audience. And also, it's a good time to ask them to leave a review and a rating if they haven't already. So, and just thanking them again. So those are the big things I do after the interview. And we've talked about this before, but one thing that a lot of podcast hosts and your clients might not understand is, and I learned this from you, and it's so true, that you can't rely on guests to promote your podcast for you. Because mm-hmm. the reality is that so many times when people come on as a guest, they don't end up sharing it, even if you try to like make it really easy for them, for whatever reason, for a variety of reasons, they don't end up sharing it. So that's something to make sure your client knows. I actually have a client who we created a guest release form for, and it's part of it that the guest has to sign that says like, I will share this.
Oh.
And so then we create like a custom link so we can actually see if they did end up sharing it or not.
Interesting. So does that increase the, like, do they actually share it each time then?
Majority have. We just started doing this a couple months ago, and the majority has. And like in the email to them, I'll say, you know, as we discussed, we would really appreciate if you share this with your audience. Here's like your custom link so that they know it's like specifically for them. And you do what you can, but it's an extra little push to try and get them to share.
Yeah. Well, I think that that makes sense in I've started to be on some more summits. And when you're a speaker on a summit, at least the ones I've been part of, they require you to post a certain amount of time in promoting the summit before it starts. So that kind of is the same, like, hey, if we're going to feature you, then we really want you to promote it. Are you willing to promote it 3 times before the summit, or, you know, when the episode goes live? So maybe that's more of like kind of what will become normal, is saying like, hey, this is like a requirement. Now it's not like, what are you going to do if they don't do it? But just kind of putting those terms around it would probably help.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if it's a huge name, obviously we're not going to be like, you have to share. Like, basically we'll do anything to have you come on as a guest. You don't have to share. But if you do, that'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you were saying, a lot of people don't share because I find it's because of a couple reasons of they're speaking on the same topic on a lot of different shows. And so to what value is it for their audience to see that they've been on another show? So that's the biggest reason, I think, is that it's like they're ultimately, we each have to serve our audience as well. So is it really serving their audience to just say, hey, by the way, I'm talking about my story of how I built a $1 million business. I've already heard that story. I heard it on your podcast. I've heard it. So that's why, depending on who your client is, you maybe just have to not expect that. And also, I believe that bringing on guests is how you bring value to your current listeners. And the way that you grow your show is by being on, well, one way is because you're really serving your current audience, then they're going to share it. So that's one way that like the guests end up, you know, growing your audience. But getting in front of new people by being on other shows, that's how you really grow. So I think that just sharing that with your clients is really impactful. They're like, oh, okay. So having guests is important, but not maybe for the reason I thought it was.
Yes. So well said. That is so true. So true. And I think another reason that sometimes people don't share is if they're a business owner that has a team and they might have somebody who's doing their social media, a lot of times these people will have their content planned, you know, weeks in advance. And if they get something new, they might be like, you know, I don't have the space for this, or I already have my content planned and scheduled and all of that. I think the best way and the most effective way that I've seen people actually share is if the podcast host posts it on their Instagram stories, tags them, and all the other person who was the guest has to do is reshare it on their stories, is at, you know, the click of a button.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. That makes me think, have you looked back on if those guests are responding or looking at that email that you send?
When I thank them and give them the link and everything?
Yeah.
Yeah, they usually do. And they usually will write back too.
Oh, okay. Because I started looking at that and mine will only get looked at like half the time.
Really?
Yeah, which I mean, maybe that's something that I need to look into. But I ultimately don't really care that much because of what I've said. And also the reason I thought about this was because when my client posts on Instagram about the show, the guests will always reshare. And like you said, it's so easy for them and it's on their stories. And so they don't worry as much about like, what does it look like? What is the caption? Da, da, da. Like, how long is it going to be on my feed? Like, they don't worry about all of those things when it comes to Instagram is insane. So they're just like, oh, cool. Another thing I can just share to my stories today. And they quick share it. So that's like more of my strategy nowadays anyway.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I'm totally with you. I think it's hard for some hosts to understand that. The way that you worded it before is perfect. And I think that that would make an impact just to let them know that really the way to grow their audience is to be on other podcasts and explaining why that guest might not reshare it because it's just the same topic that their audience has heard over and over again.
Yeah, definitely. One thing that I wanted to add with like the saying thank you is that some podcast hosts will send gifts to their guests. And I used to work on a show where she would send a wine bottle, a custom wine bottle to every single guest, which I thought was so cool. I loved it. It like seemed overkill to me, to be honest, but I liked it anyway. And I've then taken that wine bottle and used it like to send to my clients when they launch, or I've even sent it to people in my personal life now for whatever reason. I'll send you a wine bottle.
But any excuse.
Any reason. Any reason at all.
It's 2020. Here's a bottle of wine.
Right. 100%. 100%. So, and you even sent me one that was amazingly gold. So yeah, it's like just wine bottles for everyone. But I, even if it isn't a wine bottle, just thinking of any idea to like even like a handwritten note would be super impactful. And it depends on kind of the space, but I love that gesture.
I love that. I love that. How often was she having guests on? Was it like weekly that she was doing this?
She had like 2 to 3 guests a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very generous. Mm-hmm. I love that idea. Some even, like you said, even a handwritten note, like I think that's so nice. I use, because you had told me about this, and I do the same thing. When I have a client who launches, I do the wine bottle, and they just like absolutely love it because it's so special and personalized.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, if you put like their cover art or a picture of them on it, it like, it's just really well done. And that site, the one that I send is like, I think $30, maybe $40. Like it's very reasonable. Now, if you're sending that to like 3 people a month, you need to work that into your budget. Yeah. But like if we're just talking about launch clients, then yeah, it's like a super cute thing. I love it. And I'll put the link to that, the site that I use in the show notes in case people want to start doing that for whatever, like we said, whatever reason.
Anything really.
Anyone in your life that needs some wine, we're here for them.
Yes.
Okay, awesome. Is there anything that you want to add as far as guest management goes? Number one, I feel like we could do like a 4-part series on guest management, but is there anything that you want to add as far as like how to book and where to look?
I think just like you said, always, if you're going to do this for a new client and you're trying to put a package together, just think about all of these things that we talked about, especially if it's somebody new that you're working with, like consider the time that you're going to be spending figuring out what platform is going to be best for you to do research. And if you're familiar with the space at all or not, it might take a little while to get things going. But once you do, and once you're in the groove and like you really know the client and you know the space, it does become easier. And I just love it. I think it's so fun because you get to be the person that reaches out asking to be a guest, and everybody loves that. So it's fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you ever have any questions about it, you can always post it in one of our Facebook groups and we can help you price your package.
Yes. In the Podcast Manager Mastermind Facebook group, we have even posted a like swap thread. So go check that out. It's a couple months old at this point, but go on there and post and it'll just pop right back up. But like if your client is looking for guests, and our group isn't huge, so you won't get bombarded like what we were talking about in these like big groups. So yeah, you can use that swap thread to look for your guests and also to look for podcasts to be on, because that's the swap part.
Yes. And we need to repost that again. So we'll put that up in December.
Yeah, let's do that. All right, Sarah, thank you so much for coming on and chatting about guest management with me. Where can our audience follow you and see what you're up to?
So they can, I have a Facebook business page. It's sarahwhitaker.podcast. I am in the process of finally getting a website. I have gone all this time without a website. It's going to be done at the end of the month. It will be sarahwhitaker.com for future listeners. And my Instagram, which I am not very good at, is Sarah, S-A-R-A, Wit, W-H-I-T-T, 88.
Okay, awesome. And you're also in that Facebook group that we mentioned, the Podcast Manager Mastermind Facebook group. You're in there all the time answering questions, which yes. I love. So go hang out with Sarah there and let us know any questions that you guys have about guest management and specific questions of like whatever struggles you're having with your specific clients that you're working with. So, all right, I'll talk to you later.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for hanging out with me today. Come connect with me over on Instagram at Lauren Wrighton or in the Podcast Manager Mastermind on Facebook and let me know what you liked about this episode. You can always find the links and resources mentioned in this show over at laurenwrighton.com. Until next time, I'll be cheering you on.